Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, today, my guest is Mignon Brooks, and I'm going to read a biography of her, and then I will introduce her to you. Mignon is founder and president of Dream Purposefully Empowerment Services. She knows all about finding fulfillment and purpose in a career. At Seton Hall University, Mignon changed her major in her junior year from criminal law to journalism because she was not feeling stimulated in her classes. Through years of working as a college professor, Brooks saw that many of her students had no idea how to make their passions come alive in the form of a career. Being deeply connected to finding spiritual solutions for herself, she wanted to give hope to others by teaching them tools to acquire the desires in their hearts. She provides group coaching and one-on-one coaching. She combines spiritual principles, solution-oriented thinking, and her master degree in adult education of curriculum and instruction to provide a game plan for her clients to apply. And now, Mignon Brooks. Mignon, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
You are welcome. I enjoy having people with diverse interests. I enjoy people that take a spiritual approach to life, and I'll be very interested in hearing how you take a spiritual approach to helping your students find their own spiritual approach to their life journeys and to their careers. Yes, let me ask you, what makes Dream Purposely Empowerment Services different from other career and college coaches?
Well, I find that because I do work with other career and college coaches, because I feel like, you know, that unity with working with other coaches to provide the best services for college students is definitely a great idea. And also for students that, you know, everybody thinks that college students are, you know, all young, and a lot of them are. A lot of people decide to go straight from high school to college, but some people don't. Some people decide to wait, you know, however many years, and it just depends on their life circumstances. So Dream Purposefully Empowerment Services, what I've noticed when I work with other coaches is that I definitely coach my clients and students through actually doing the work themselves. So I'm kind of like their cheerleader, their encouragement along the way. However, I don't do it for them. Like when they're putting together, you know, a resume or a cover letter, because, you know, I've taught English for several years, you know, I'll go through the edits with them and discuss it with them. When they're trying to set a goal, I do something called an AIM SMART goal, where we figure out what's, you know, acceptable in terms of reaching their goal. They aren't, you know, overreaching. Not to say that their dreams won't, you know, be too high, because I believe in dreaming whatever your heart's desires are. However, you know, taking it bit by bit so that the student won't be overwhelmed. So a lot of the responsibility is just really making it a learning experience for the student as opposed to doing everything for them, so that once we're done with our coaching services, or, you know, I have a lot of clients, especially if I'm doing one-on-one coaching or group coaching, they'll come back for the group coaching, or maybe they, you know, decide to come back to the one-on-one coaching. It just depends. So the main difference is that I put a lot of the responsibility, or most of the responsibility, on my client, and I hold them accountable for, you know, actually taking the steps to move forward. Because if they're not taking the steps to move forward, how are they going to learn these skills that we need to know for life?
Well, it sounds like the key word is responsibility.
Absolutely, absolutely. Responsibility is definitely a key word.
Do you find that your students are motivated?
I find that find that the students that I work with in terms of my life coaching practice are motivated. In fact, I always have a consultation with my students or my clients prior to working with them, because I need them to be motivated in order to go forward with the coaching process. I find that in the classroom, because I'm a professor as well, in the classroom, and this is why I started coaching, some students are motivated and some aren't. I tend to, most of my students are freshmen and sophomores in college, and they kind of just think that going to school is just the next thing to do. They don't really have a plan, or, you know, and that's normal. That's fine. I never knew that I was going to be a life coach at this point of my life, but things, you know, in life evolve that way. So in
right.
terms of motivation, it varies. And I always talk to a parent and say, because a lot of parents contact me, of course, especially since most of the times they're the one, you know, footing the bill. So I'll say, okay, you know, let's have a consultation with your son or daughter so that I can, you know, evaluate their value system, and it's just, you know, about a 30-minute consultation just to see where they're at, if they are willing. That's the key word with this one, willingness, and also open-mindedness, willingness to move forward.
Well, I'd like to explore your own personal journey a little bit later. Can you tell me what a one-on-one coaching relationship looks like and walk me through the steps?
Absolutely. In a one-on-one coaching relationship, I kind of explained it earlier. It's working one-on-one. I'm, you know, encouraging them along the way. We do a value system ahead of time, because a lot of times what people value is connected to what they want to do. Some people, like I've had students in my classroom say, I just want to make a lot of money. I don't know what I want to do, but I just want to make a lot of money doing it. And as you said, we'll talk about my experience a little later, but sometimes that we feel like that's what we want to do, and along the journey we realize that, you know, things change, life evolves, we, you know, learn something new and different each day. And that's really about what my life coaching practice is about, is to sort of reflect on what we're learning each day, what that student is learning each day as they evolve to be really a responsible human being in life, and to actually enjoy doing those things that they, you know, are doing along the way. So the step-by-step process is to take them through the value system, you know, take a look at their limiting beliefs. Like sometimes, you know, a lot of times these beliefs that we were raised with hold us back, and from different dreams that we have. So we evaluate, you know, limiting beliefs. I call them gremlins. We actually give the gremlins a name, because what I do is, like, there's always a reason why a student or, you know, a client has a limiting belief. Maybe that limiting belief protected them early on in life. However, it's no longer useful. So we'll go through those type of things, the obstacles, those blocking thoughts, and opening those up and releasing what needs to be opened up, and actually gaining more open-minded thoughts so that they can move forward in what they want to do.
Well, I'm hearing a lot of words that do refer to spiritual journey. I'm hearing
that
experiential journey that, that people go through. I'm hearing about willingness that I think is key in everything that we do in life. I'm hearing about dreams. I'm hearing about beliefs. And I'm hearing about thoughts. And it seems to me that when we can be present to our thoughts and train our minds to focus on the positive and what is possible, that then we're going to be on our way to realizing our dreams.
Absolutely. You know, people don't, sometimes people don't, and I've been in this situation myself, don't realize the limitless potential and possibilities that are out there. And it's really about connecting the students with that, with the hope and the dreams and having them come alive step by step.
Now, what are the steps of a group coaching relationship?
Well, in the group coaching relationship, I think is very interesting because the students get a chance to, I usually do like an online or over the telephone because my students I'm in New Jersey, they aren't just from New Jersey. So that way we're able to get in online and actually have like a meeting. So they actually get assignments and they're able to discuss, you know, how they felt once they've completed the assignments. I'll give you an example. Sometimes we do, I'll conduct a group coaching. Actually, I keep this up on a regular basis. I'll pick out a different spiritual book like Spiritual Laws of Success by Deepak Chopra or, you know, The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, you know.
Great books.
That, oh, I know. It's, in, you know, it just opens up the mind to so many different things. And so a lot of times I find that, especially as a teacher, that students will learn from each other and can sometimes relate because they're, you know, the same age range, they can relate to each other. And so as they're discussing how they're actually applying these principles to their life, then they're actually able to say, okay, well, you know, this was my obstacle for the week or this is how I applied it. Okay, maybe I'll try that. So that's kind of what the group coaching is. It's just a weekly, you know, basis, getting in touch with each other on a weekly basis and also really and having assignments that they do throughout the week based on their goals. And it's really an interesting experience. It's definitely full of, you know, fun and, you know, we try not to take it ourselves too seriously as some of us do in life.
Well, I can relate to that. I've had a lifelong challenge with taking myself too seriously. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that I did when I reinvented myself was I became an author, and I wrote books that are dedicated to adult children to give them a chance to not take life so seriously, and they are comedy books with a spiritual message. So that's something that I've done in my life, and I had to use, I didn't use a coach, although I have way in my past. But what I did was I read Rick Warren's book, The Spirit, The Purpose-Driven Life, which
is
a 40-day spiritual, and I did the 40-day spiritual journey, and what came out of that for me was that my life's purpose at the time was to write my autobiography about recovery from multiple addictions. And when I was done writing that, I wanted to keep writing, and that's when I came up with the idea of using some crazy characters I developed to entertain a coworker, and I began a series of books, and I've written 14.
Oh, that's really cool. I love that. I love that.
Yeah,
I definitely want to check it out.
Okay, well, I'll tell you about that after the interview, but I guess what I'm trying to do is inspire hope in other people and encourage them, if they can't do it on their own, if they don't take a spiritual approach to life, contact Mingnan, and she can help walk you through the process, because I think one of the things that's so important in life is that we don't do things alone and that that we reach out for help, and that's a sign of courage and self-empowerment to reach out for help rather than to struggle. What do you think about
Absolutely. That? Absolutely. Because you know what? You know, like I talked about with the group coaching is that we all, you know, I believe in having a strong network of people around me. I always say that if everybody agrees with me, then I'm in trouble. And, you know, because I don't expect that to happen. It's just unrealistic. And
right.
I think it's very important to bounce ideas off of each other. You know, networking is so important. And sometimes my network, we always think of business networking, like just networking within our career field. But it goes much broader than that. I have, you know, I have personally have a network of people who are spiritual advisors or, you know what I mean? Like they're just on a different path. However, it all connects together, and that's, you know, something that, yeah, that's something that I myself didn't realize, like, you know, I had all this self-will to get through this, get through that, you know what I mean? Like, it was all about me, and I just was going to get through, drive through each situation and experience that I had, and I realized that it wasn't like that, that people are brought into our lives. I love that saying, people are brought into our lives for a reason, a season, and a lifetime. And I don't believe in coincidences. I believe that,
no.
You know, it seems like exactly what I need at the time, not necessarily what I want right then and there, you know? And that's why, you know, the spiritual journey is so amazing because I don't have all the answers. And it's important for my spirituality to be very close connected with my source in order for that to come through. I'm not helping anybody or being effective in helping anybody unless I'm doing that myself and holding myself to the same standards that I hold my students.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting what you were saying about source or what some people refer to as God is that if we take a look at things and look back on our life, even though we don't think that prayers were answered, God has always taken care of every need. Now, not necessarily every want, but I believe that desires of the heart, that passions, that all of those things will manifest if a person keeps an open mind and doesn't bemoan where they're at now, but just dreams and practices gratitude for where they're at now and is open to possibilities.
Absolutely. One of the things that I always have my students do is to write a gratitude list. I started, you know, within the new year in 2014, one of the things that, you know, and like I said, I hold myself accountable for doing some of these exercises. Really, they're exercises for life, but and we learn something new on a regular basis is to, when I come home each day, you know, write down on a little slip of paper, and actually another coach that, you know, I'm friends with suggested this to me, is to write down on, like, a little piece of paper, and I have, like, a little mason jar, and I write down something that I'm grateful for that day. And, you know, sometimes within the lower moments of my day, I'll just, you know, take out one of those things, and it reminds me of being grateful for just even the smallest thing, no matter how small or how big it is.
Right, and I do that too, and of course Oprah Winfrey was a great proponent of gratitude lists, and look
Absolutely.
At where it's gotten her. Yeah.
I love Oprah.
Do you only coach college students?
Well, here's the thing. It's funny that you asked that. I believe that all of us are learners. You know, I teach. However, I learn stuff from my students on a daily basis. So we all play different roles in life. And that's the thing when we're talking about the network. Like, my network consists of my students because they're teaching me something new every single day. And as we, you know, we've mentioned open-mindedness throughout this conversation is that, you know, sometimes when we're shut off from what others can teach us, we don't, you know, realize that they have something to offer us. So do I only coach college students? No, I don't. I don't make it that exclusive. I also coach people who are in the midst of their career, and they're actually students too, because we all are. And who are, you know, they might be in the midst of their career, and their career is, you know, kind of hit an obstacle, or some, you know, clients that I work with, you know, one of the obstacles could be, you know, that they lost their job or they were laid off, and that often causes a depression, which I can relate to. And so, you know, I believe when I say, you know, collegiate career coach, I believe that, you know, I coach college students, and I also coach career-oriented people.
Well, you said a couple of things that I think are really important. You talked about learning from your students, and I've heard it said that when the student is ready, the master appears. But the question that always occurs to me at that point is, who is the master and who is the student? Because roles reverse.
They do.
And the other thing is, I like the way you talked about taking responsibility, practicing what you preach, being congruent, and doing the same things that you expect of your students. And I think that that sets an example that somebody realizes that the teacher is following her own advice.
Absolutely. How can I share an experience with someone else if I haven't experienced it myself?
Now, what advice would you give to somebody who's miserable in their career?
For somebody who's miserable in their career, we touched on it a little bit, is to find gratitude in certain places. And I find, you know, like I said, even the smallest things. We touched on this earlier too, is like not focusing on all of the things that bring us down and kind of make us stuck. Like those limiting beliefs, they keep us stuck from being open-minded because we never are able to see things in another way. That's, you know, something that I practiced, you know, with my students and with my clients. It's like, okay, so, you know, what if you look at it this way? And, you know, just being able to sit in there like, oh, yeah, I didn't even notice that or see that. And so, again, just being keenly aware of where we are in the present moment, and also how we can, what we can give back, what we can give to it. We always, like many people, not saying we always, but oftentimes we think about, okay, our job is something that we're, you know, we're there, we go to our job, it's like a daily grind, and then I collect my paycheck. What enjoyment is life with that type of, you know, thinking and with that, you know, with that daily routine, and not even being able to give something to the situation. So I know I've been in situations where, like, and, you know, a coworker has just gotten on my nerves, and then I look within myself. What is it about me that person's habits are ticking inside of me? And normally it's always, like, it's so funny because it always refers back to me. It always does.
It does.
So, and, you know, keeping an open mind to that, because some people do not like self-reflection. And let me tell you, that has definitely opened up my spiritual path.
Well, I belong to 12-step programs, and one of the things that we have to do is take a personal inventory of ourselves, because it's so easy to focus on somebody else's faults without looking at our own dark sides and how that contributes to the equation. And
Absolutely.
So in the process of doing that, hopefully we can also look at the assets that we have and recognize that there's a continuum between defect and asset. And we've got a little competition here.
And, exactly.
You know, and work toward the asset. So, you know, it's very important, that self-reflection piece. Now, I'd like to ask you, how can somebody get in touch with their passions?
How can they get in touch with their passions? It usually relies within their value system. They can just, I mean, I believe that many of us have dreams and many of us have aspirations. We just don't believe we can do it. That's really what holds us back, is that we don't, is the disbelief that we can do it. And so chipping away at those limiting beliefs again, and some of them, they're not even, you know, they're not even conscious beliefs. They're things that we've picked up along the way. You know, I mentioned earlier Don Miguel Ruiz's The Four Agreements. We agree to these things. He calls it the domestication. And, you know, as we're raised, we just automatically agree. We carry that into our teen years, our adult years. And then when you ask somebody, like, why do you believe this? You know, they don't really have an answer for it. It's like, oh, well, my great-great-great-great-grandfather had that belief, and it was passed on and on and on. And, you know, for that great-great-great-great-grandfather, that might have worked in that time, in that situation. But now, in this particular, for this particular person, you know, it's bringing it back to the present moment and the present person and tapping into what they really enjoy. I always say, take a look at what you enjoy doing, and you're not even looking at the clock. Like, you're, you know, because a lot of people are, you know, when they're at work, or, for instance, I've taken classes in college or even in high school where I'm all constantly looking at the clock. You know, I can't wait for it to be over. And so I have my clients just think of things that they enjoy doing and really, you know, kind of keen in on those type of things.
Don't you think it's important? I mean, some people might say, I don't know what I enjoy. And So I think somebody has to be a real possibility thinker and to recognize that it's only their limited beliefs, as you were referring to earlier, that can block them from whatever their passions might be. I mean, it could be something as simple as gardening. And perhaps They could get into a landscape business, for example.
Absolutely. And that's where we start, is taking away, chipping away at those limiting beliefs that they're not even conscious of. And, you know, and then the possibilities occur. You know, the possibilities are clear.
What advice would you give to somebody who's unemployed and looking for a job?
Is to stay active. A lot of times we isolate and get into our deep ruts. I know I've been there. Get into deep ruts, and we're just, like, so stuck on the past, not realizing it. You know, you mentioned this earlier, not realizing that God might be giving us what we need. We're looking, you know, that old saying, like, we're looking so hard at the door that closed, we're not even open to what possibilities are in front of us. And so that's why I say remain active, remain in front of other people. This may be an opportunity to take classes. I know I've taken online classes to advance, you know, my understanding in a particular field or to advance my thinking, whether it's in my field or not. And also the networking component. You never know who you're going to meet along the way. I mean, that's what's so exciting about this journey is, like I said earlier, I don't have all the answers to the journey because I don't even know what possibilities. And to me, that's the exciting part about it.
Well, I like that very much because God does place people in our paths. And so we have to be open and recognize that every person, place, and thing that happens to us happens for a reason. And quite often that comes out of being present to the moment. And when we are stuck in our past or projecting on the future, we're not being present to the moment and the possibilities that can occur now. Now, there are challenges for some people. For instance, the over 50 person who's been laid off, looking for a job, meeting with age discrimination. What kind of advice would you give to a person with that challenge?
With that challenge, I would definitely say, like, again, being open. You know, I know we've mentioned that so many times, open to changing your career. Open to, you know, if you're, I've worked with clients that, you know, have that age barrier, and there's always something, it's like kind of the bucket list. When I get to this point, I want to be able to do this. Well, why not do it now? This may be your opportunity to do that. I know people that, you know, are 50 plus and that have started their own businesses or have worked with their kids, to help them start their own businesses. And then it becomes a family business. You just never know. And also just, again, remaining active. As somebody is aging, it's so important for them to remain active. For instance, you know, I have a mother who, she's a retired teacher, and she remains active. She actually, you know, you mentioned the 12-step program earlier. She teaches at a rehabilitation center for students who were kicked out of their, you know, their own schools, their own public schools, and are going to this rehabilitation with counseling and stuff like that. She teaches them what they would have learned in their own schools, so dealing with the academics. So, you know, it's just remaining active and moving forward. You know, somebody once told me that a stream never, you know, a stream always moves forward. And I think a lot of things we can learn by what nature provides to us, because we can just look at nature and see how that path goes, and just, you know, like that saying, be still and know that I am God, you know, and know that he's going to take care of our needs.
Well, I have a brilliant example of somebody over 50 who got laid off from a long-standing career and had to reinvent herself, and that's my producer, who now has a very successful show called Second Act Boomers, which is on Blog Talk Radio. So if anybody wants to see how somebody has reinvented themselves and possibly be a guest or to call in and ask about how they can overcome those challenges, that's another avenue that they have. So tune into Paula G's program, Second Act Boomers, on Blog Talk Radio, and that's on Fridays at 3 o'clock Pacific time, 6 o'clock Eastern time, if I have that correct. Now,
awesome.
What can
someone...
Awesome.
I know some people that I would definitely refer to that show. That sounds awesome.
Oh, great. Well, I'll give you that information after the show if you call me back at my number, which Paula can provide you, because we will be cut off at the end. Or just send me an email with your telephone number, and I will give you a call. Now, where can someone stay abreast of upcoming events that you're offering?
They can go to my website. It's www.collegiatecareercoach.com. I'm always updating information. Well, my website is always updating my information and keeping me active, not only on my website, but also active amongst the social media, because that's just the, that, it seems like that's where, you know, you can constantly get clients and also keep them aware of what's going on. So I'm on Facebook. I have a business page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google Plus, LinkedIn, and it's just, you know, that's how I keep my clients aware of what's going on. Well, especially new clients, clients that I already have, I'll email them, and they, you know, all of the new upcoming events that I hold, and even if I'm speaking at a particular event, I'll constantly, you know, keep them engaged as to what I'm doing.
Let's give the callers a chance to get a pen and piece of paper ready, and then I'll ask you to give them your website address again. And now, would you please spell your first name for people that might not know how to spell Mignon?
Absolutely. It's just like filet mignon. It's M as in Mary, I, G, N as in Nancy, O, and N as in Nancy. And then my last name is Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S.
So if you want to, people, you can Google her, and you could a request on Facebook, for example. And now would you give your web address again?
Sure. It's www.collegiatecareercoach.com.
Thank you. Now, we're going to just take a little commercial break. This is going to advertise my latest book, David Clark's Shades of Gay. And if you go to Amazon.com, there's more than one Shades of Gay there, so you would have to put in Shades of Gay by David Clark. And so here's the commercial.
Prepare to be shocked. Prepare to be moved. Prepare to laugh. Prepare to cry. And prepare to be inspired. Dive into David Clark's latest book, Shades of Gay, and you will find yourself plunged into the trenches of sexual addiction. You will embark upon a kaleidoscopic tour from the abyss to higher ground. In the beginning, it was love at first sight when Daniel and Mark met, but through the years, that same love became tainted. Daniel, an alcoholic and sex addict, has found himself unable to resist the lure of other men. When Mark discovers his infidelity, he leaves Daniel, who begins a dark descent into sexual tryst after tryst. Shades of Gay reveals the myriad desires a lost man can permit his body and soul to revel in despite the pain they bring. But can such fleeting moments of pleasure bring meaning to life? Will Daniel realize the love he had with Mark is worth more than the sweat spent in other men's beds?
And again, that's Shades of Gay by David Clark on Amazon.com. And my website is authordavidclark.com, where you can watch a video of the book. Okay, Mignon, we have Mignon Brooks here, who's a collegiate career coach, and we're going to explore her own journey now. So I'd like to ask, how did you decide to become a life coach?
It definitely was a journey. Like I said, I never thought that this is, you know, where life would take me. I went to Seton Hall University in New Jersey. So I'm definitely New Jersey born and raised. And I chose Seton Hall University because I wanted to be a criminal lawyer. And now I'm so far from that idea. And that's, again, like, you know, then I didn't, that was just, you know, what did I want to do? I wanted to make money. And so I figured that that was a good profession to go into to make money. And so I knew Seton Hall had a great law school. And, I entered in my freshman year and I started taking my basic core courses that most students, you know, begin with. And then my sophomore year, I started taking criminal justice classes. And I realized that although I was interested in, you know, the profiling, more the psychology type of, criminal justice, those type of classes, I was not so, you know, excited about the technical law classes because I felt like they were so boring and I just felt very stagnant in my classes. It's not that I was not receiving good grades in my classes because I always studied hard, but I just didn't like what I was doing. And I figured, well, if I'm in college and I can't stand this now, I can only imagine what it's going to be like later on in life. So, I took time to reflect. I don't know, you know, what made me do it. Again, that's one of those God aha moments. But I took time to reflect on what I enjoyed doing without really, you know, spending much time doing it. And the overwhelming answer to me was that I enjoyed writing. I love to write, and I also enjoyed communicating and getting to know different people. To be a learner on a regular basis. I don't think I realized that, you know, I kind of had the concept that I was going to learn up to a certain point, that there was always this, you know, goal that I wanted to obtain and to reach. And as opposed to, you know, continuing the journey throughout life. And I decided to become a journalist. And so I majored in communications with a focus on journalism. And, I started off, like, as soon as I graduated from college, I started off at a very small newspaper in South Jersey. And then I went on to write for the Philadelphia Tribune, which is the first African-American newspaper in the country. And, boy, was that exciting. And at the time, Philadelphia was undergoing the state was taking over the Philadelphia school district. And, you know, and I was covering education. And as I mentioned earlier, my mother is a retired teacher. She taught special ed for several years. And I got so wrapped up in the education part of it and with the students and the parents and, you know, that, you know, their passion about what they wanted and also the state's passion about, you know, the standards that they wanted their students to have and to experience. And, you know, it was very exciting. And then it was funny because, you know, going to networking events, I met, you know, a girl a woman there that out of the blue, you know, to me it seemed like out of the blue, but like I mentioned earlier, there are no coincidences. And she worked in the field of public relations, and I didn't know that she also, public relations was sort of her freelance job, but her main full-time job was in education and reading and writing. And she asked me if I wanted to visit the college, and I'll never forget this. It was so funny. I was contacting her because I knew her more in a social networking environment, and I said, like, is this an interview? Like, you know, I don't know exactly what I'm going for. It's like one of those feelings where you don't know exactly what's going to be there when you get there, but you know that it's probably going to be something good, you know, something good's going to come out of it, or you have that just I call it your gut feeling, that God uttering truth, your gut. And
I love that.
You know, so yeah, it's definitely, because I can feel it in the pit of my stomach, and it's just like, you know, something is interesting about this. And so I remember calling her and say, am I just meeting with you or am I meeting with other people? And she's like, I said, I have jeans on, like, you know, and she was like, just get over here. And I'm like, okay. So I drive to the community college, and she asked me to teach classes, and I was like, I don't know, you know, like, I'm more of a journalist, I'm more into writing, never thought about education, and, you know, I went ahead and did it. You know, again, I didn't know why I was, you know, why I met her. I didn't even think about it. The thought never crossed my mind. I just went ahead and started teaching classes, and then in the meantime, while I was teaching my classes, I realized that I loved teaching classes so much, and I loved teaching English. It was like, you know, I enjoyed writing, but I also enjoyed teaching people how to do it. And so that was kind of like the win-win situation for me. And so I decided to go back to school, and I got my master's degree from the University of Phoenix online to teach, you know, actually I majored in adult education, curriculum and instruction development. And so it just, and again, one of those aha moments, there's no coincidences. As soon as I, you know, was teaching at the, so I had like a million things going on. I was freelancing for the Philadelphia Tribune. I wasn't working there full time anymore. I was coaching cheerleading at a local high school that I attended. I was also, that was always a passion of mine since I was 7 years old, was cheerleading and competitive cheerleading. And I was also getting my master's degree and teaching part-time as an adjunct at, you know, the community college. And so, you know, it was definitely a very busy life, you know, and kind of, and definitely overwhelming. I don't know if I could do it now, knowing what, you know, then I was, it was just like, yeah, just give me everything. I love to keep my day busy. And now, you know, and this talks about my spiritual journey, now I like to take time and to be present in the moment and sort of take that time out to meditate. That's definitely one of my spiritual, like, consistent spiritual practices. So what I did is that, you know, as soon as I finished with my master's degree, because I needed a master's degree in order to teach full-time at the community college, it was literally like, I mean, a month after I received my master's degree, like at the college that I was teaching, a full-time job became available in that department. And, I mean, it was as easy as, you know, I was at the nail salon with my mom, and she's looking through the newspaper, and she's like, oh, they're hiring. And I went home, and I applied for a job, and there I was teaching at the college level.
What are some of the best moments that you've experienced in your career?
One thing I want to go back, kind of rewind and touch on is, you know, I took us through my whole journey in terms of how I became a professor, but I wanted to touch on also how I became a life coach. One of the things that I noticed in my classes, as I mentioned earlier, was that it was frustrating for me to see that, you know, I was always a big dreamer and always believed in possibilities. I didn't necessarily know how I was going to get to them, which is definitely part of the coaching process, as I talked about, you know, setting goals and taking it piece by piece. But actually, I took my nephew out to a basketball camp in San Diego, California, and we were standing in line, and there was this woman there that just radiated, you know, it was just like radiation was beaming off of her. She seemed so happy, and I was just like, wow, this, you know, this woman is like, it's just like one of those people that radiate not even happiness, but a joy, which I believe that there's a difference between the two. That joy is that most internal feeling. And so, you know, and I just sparked up a conversation with her, and she was a life coach, and I said to myself, like, you know, I want to do that. It's kind of like, you know, I definitely can see myself trying to inspire people, especially my students, where I found like they were just, like I mentioned earlier, just going to college because it was the next thing to do or the next, you know, thing that their parents asked them to do. And boy, can they save a lot of money if they, you know, figure out, you know, what they want to do as opposed to just jumping into something they have no idea. So in
are some of the obstacles you've encountered in your career?
Some of the obstacles have definitely been, you know, I moved down to Florida for 2.5 years. My mom was sick, and so I moved down to Florida to be with her. And I have a brother, two nephews, and a niece that live in Orlando, Florida. And so in terms of my career was that, you know, the economy was going wild. And, you know, and that was when a lot of people were going through, but, you know, depression, and I sort of isolated myself and, you know, became depressed and really felt like I couldn't even move off the couch. Like, I just felt immobile, and that's what I talked about earlier, is to keep moving forward, because I felt like I was in such a rut. Another thing is, like, I had up to that point always identified myself by my career. And now I realize through spiritual practice that there are many more aspects of me as opposed to what I do. You know, there's so many different aspects of our life than just, you know, than just a career, than just working. I mean, you know, I don't want to shortchange having a career, because we do spend a lot of our time at our jobs, whether we own them or whether we're working at a company. So my biggest obstacle was that depression that I went through, and also trying to take care of my mother at the same time, because I felt like if I wasn't productive at work, that was, you know, my identification of myself, my limiting belief. If I wasn't productive at work and earning money, then who was I? And now that I reflect on it at that, you know, at this moment, who was I? I was a caretaker for my mother. I was present with my brother and my nephews, and also my niece while, you know, they were growing up. And, you know, I was present for them. That's who I was at the time, and that was the role that God wanted me to play. And I continue to play, you know, that role. But now it's just, it's more of a balance to my life as opposed to being just a career-driven person all of the time, 24/7.
I think you brought up a very interesting point, and that is the way that we can limit ourselves in looking at labels that we wear, be it the job that we have, be it something like our gender, our sexuality. There are so many different ways that we can limit ourselves. We're children of God with limitless possibilities. And so we need to not put ourselves into little boxes, but be open to all the different things that we can become. And who we are.
Absolutely.
Who we are.
Yeah.
I believe we're spiritual beings having a human experience.
I love that saying. I believe it too. I truly do. I remember the first time I heard Wayne Dyer say that. I'm like, yeah, exactly.
Well, let's talk a little bit about spirituality. Can you tell me what your early religious and spiritual experiences were about?
Absolutely. I was raised as a Baptist Christian, and, you know, I was always, I mean, my mom was forced to go to church, so she didn't force me. She said, I'll never force my children to go to church. Like, my mom was forced to go to church, like, 7 days a week. And, you know, while she got a lot out of it, you know, she just didn't want to force upon her children, you know, what to believe or, you know, kind of find their own journey. And I'm very thankful for that. I ended up joining a Baptist church and, you know, following the Christian beliefs of my family and pursued that. I would go to church and think everything, you know, as long as I prayed and, you know, I'd do the whole Sunday thing. And I would leave church, forget about the Sunday thing, and then go ahead and move forward with my life. And, you know, it was all in my control and kind of forgetting about what I learned on Sunday and just using my own self to continue, you know, trudging along this journey of life. So that was my early, you know, experience with spirituality.
What was your early concept of God, and how has that evolved over the years?
My early concept of God was just, you know, kind of like the big guy that was in the sky. And, you know, he had control over everything, but I didn't realize that I had to play a part in that as well. One of the things that sticks out in terms of my evolution is, you know, the passage that says, faith without works is dead. You know, I would get mad at God for not doing exactly what I wanted when I wanted, you know, and I had an anger towards God. You know, I had faith that he was there, but I would get angry, especially when I talked about, you know, my depression of not working. You know, why am I not, you know, flourishing in my career? What do you mean? Like, this is prime time, you know, but it wasn't God's time. It wasn't how God planned for my journey to go. And now I respect that, and I realize that, you know, wherever I go, drawing closer to him is how things get done. You know, for instance, anytime I speak at an event or, you know, I'm doing an interview, you know, I'm kind of, you know, I'm definitely conscious of that I'm going to be talking about my, you know, my career and also, you know, my business. However, you know, I don't prepare like I used to. Because I have a reliance upon God, I pray, and I actually put that to work. That's what I mean by faith without works is dead, you know. Now I realize that by drawing closer to him, who I feel has, you know, power over everything, that gives me, like, just, you know, surrendering to him on a constant basis. You know, I don't know everything, but I believe in him who knows everything. And that's all that I need. And so every time that I walk into a classroom or every time, like, anywhere I am, whatever situation, I can rely on him. And that's what, you know, I told you, mentioned earlier, that meditation is, you know, a huge part of one of my spiritual practices. Now it's not just going to church on Sundays. It's an everyday thing. I begin my day with meditation and I end my day with meditation. And sometimes I see in the middle of my day, I need to take a break, pause, relax and, you know, meditate and kind of like just clearing of the mind because I, you know, we can get so caught up in our mind that, you know, we're not really thinking and we're not really being effective at work or to others or to anybody. Sometimes I'm saying I'm not even being effective to myself at this moment if I don't take that time to draw closer to God. And it burns my energy. I can feel when it's happening. because I feel blocked from God's light and God's energy that constantly moves throughout all of us.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've heard it said that prayer is when we talk to God and meditation is when God speaks to us. And you talked about clearing your mind, and that's when messages come to me. That's when visions come to me. And so I think that it's important to do both.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, go ahead.
No, I was just going to reflect on your depression and how that to me speaks of a faith crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
I was going to ask you if you'd had a faith crisis and how you overcame that.
I did, you know, and that exactly, like, you know, that depression was definitely a faith crisis for me. Like I said, I was isolating. I just felt like I just couldn't do anything. However, I just had to keep going because, like I said, I was taking care of my mother who was ill at the time. And, you know, thank God she's, you know, doing very well, you know, now. And I brought her back up to New Jersey with me. And we still go and visit Florida on a consistent basis. And, you know, at that time with my faith crisis, like, I was angry with God because he wasn't giving me what I wanted at that particular time. And it took me a while to admit that I was angry at God. I thought that that was like, you know, and I think this goes into my early concept of God. I was scared to admit that because God was going to punish me for that. But he knew it even before I knew it, you know, and that's the funny thing about it. And also I was angry at God for my father passed away when I was 10 years old on Christmas Day, and I always felt like, well, my career would be more effective. My father was, a flourishing businessman. He was great at business and gave a lot of people advice, and, you know, he was just that guy that people went to for advice. So I felt like, you know, angry that because he wasn't there, I was cut off from that experience of getting that knowledge from him to pursue my career to that deeper level.
Well, you spoke about anger, and I've heard that anything that isn't love is actually fear, which means
yes.
Anger is love. And I spoke to a very wise Jesuit by the name of John J. McNeil and asked him the question about what you would say to somebody that's experiencing a faith crisis. And he said very simply that it means you're afraid of God. And so the key to that is to turn to a God of love. And when you can do that, then you can get going with the flow again. So we're getting towards the end of the hour. Was there something else that you'd wanted to say when we were both kind of talking over each other?
No, I think I basically got everything out because it was like if I was answering you, you would follow up with the question. So I just appreciate having me on the show, and I really appreciate this conversation because I always love to talk about spirituality and how I incorporate that into my life and also work with my students about that. I think what some people get kind of hung up on is that, while I still am a Christian and I do believe in Jesus Christ as my personal Lord and Savior, I also believe that, you know, everybody has a right to their own beliefs and that, you know, that's just what I do, and I'm not going to force my students or my clients to do the same thing because it's their journey. Who am I to tell somebody what to believe in? As long as they believe in that loving source or that loving God or, you know, the universe, there's so many names that that are referred to as God, whom I choose to call God, that, you know, never, you know, try to push my spiritual beliefs on anybody else. You know, even though my grandmother was definitely, you know, she was definitely Christian, she would always say, you know, you're saved by your own beliefs. And I believe that to be open-ended, like, you know, that, you know, whatever your beliefs are, that's, you know, what is, you know, helping you to go along in terms of the loving source, the loving God, as opposed to a punisher. It's just like we said, anger and the fear is what's blocking us off from that love.
Well, I like that very much. Thank you, Mignon, for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I truly appreciate it, David. And, you know, I'm going to take a look at some of your work, especially the comic books that you were talking about. I think that's really cool.
Okay, well, once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing of separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.